Good afternoon. It is 2:04 p.m. on Monday, June 11th, 2018. I'm Randy Christman, Chairman of the North Dakota Public Service Commission, joined today by Commissioners Brian Krasius and Julie Fedorchak. This is a work session on case number PU-17-238, Otter Tail Power Company's Economic Development Tariff. And I don't have any opening comments. This would be Commissioner Krasius's portfolio, I believe. So, Commissioner Fedorchak, did you have any comments? I'll turn it over to you then, Commissioner, and just let you take it away.
All right. Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and good afternoon. So I'll just jump, just a couple of comments. When it comes to economic development riders, I am very much in favor of incenting economic growth, and I think sometimes you have to provide those types of incentives to get industry or businesses to expand and or look to North Dakota as a place of doing business because it's cost-effective and more competitive than other spots in the country that some of these businesses could certainly go to in reference to a new business potentially moving into state. Existing businesses, of course, we want to see them grow. So I had some concerns with just the actual application of the rider, and I think in talking to staff, I may have been getting ahead of myself a little bit at times in terms of trying to speculate exactly how it might be applied. So conceptually, I like the fact that there is something to incent economic growth. So with that said, Pat, did you have something you were going to add, or did you want to jump in at this point, and as we flesh out a few of these things?
I don't necessarily have anything to add. I don't know if anybody needs any of the background because we've been talking about it fair amount. It was on the last commission agenda to determine if anybody needed a work session, and then so we moved it down to scheduling for this work session. Just now, I guess, looking for direction from the commission as far as what to do next, whether it should be on the agenda for commission action or whether you want to talk about any differences that you might have about how you feel about the tariff filing.
Yeah, well, the one concern that I've expressed is as it might relate to a potential customer that may not reside within Otter Tail's current area, service area. So that was one of the concerns I had in terms of, and then I was looking ahead to, does that cause a potential conflict with a more attractive rate to incent someone, a business that then wants to be served by Otter Tail, even though they may not reside in the territory itself. And I think that in reference to my earlier comment becomes not only forward-looking but potentially applying it to a future case which hasn't occurred yet. So I think just in, you know, if that should surface at that point in time, that's a different case, and I think there's always the opportunity to look at all the factors at that time and not mix the two or prohibit, you know, specific use of it. So this could wind up being one of the shorter work sessions we've ever had. But also wanted to let the other commissioners weigh in if they chose to on this, and if not.
I know that Alana has had some thoughts. I think I talked to you briefly about this, about how the two issues are completely separate this issue and any TIA disagreement. So could you share your thoughts on that?
Certainly. The rates that a customer pays will end up being a part of a TIA case. It always is. From what the customer likes or wants, and also from whether the company can adequately provide the service at a reasonable rate of return. But because it's a factor that comes up in both types of cases does not mean that it's a factor that you can use sort of to decide or tweak both of those cases. Your rates, you should be worried about whether there's discrimination, whether they're reasonable, whether they're fair, whether other customers are subsidizing. And if that's true with whatever comes out of this economic development rider, that's a problem, and it doesn't matter whether it's inside their territory or outside their territory. If they're not discriminatory, if there's no subsidization, if they're above cost, their legitimate rates, whether it's inside their territory or outside their territory. So that's your reasonableness of rates issue, which is different from the 10 issues that you're supposed to be looking at in a TIA case. So even though they do impact each other, I mean, rates are going to impact a TIA case in the sense that customers are going to pay those and they're either going to like them or not like them, and the company is going to make a certain amount of revenue because of that rate. It would be my recommendation that you not use one to constrain the other, that separately, conceptually, constitutionally, they are separate judgments.
So then on the issue of discrimination, because I think the reasonable and the fair I see pretty well addressed in here because they would not be less than the actual costs. So that covers both reasonable and fair.
Well, it covers discrimination also, the economic standard.
But would anybody be able to get them?
Well,
that same rate?
Anyone,
isn't that the discrimination issue?
Anyone that meets whatever the criteria, and I don't have that memorized, the criteria for qualifying anyone similarly situated, whatever
right.
that criteria is, yes.
Right.
It's my understanding.
So it's kind of based on a load issue for existing and greenfield customers and a few other things.
Yeah, I'm assuming that staff vetted that concept of when they decided to file in support. Although, if you recall, at the work session, we did have a question about the actual implementation under the existing language that it didn't exactly say what staff and the company was telling us was supposed to be the process. But I understand the company's willing to tweak that and make that more clear. Because each time this model is run, the information is supposed to be provided to staff for them to do that same little case-by-case analysis of whether it's fair and reasonable and non-discriminatory. Thanks.
And we're saying that the tariff doesn't include that? It's not clear?
It's not quite clear in the
commission
approval part. I marked that. And I just talked with them again about were they willing to work on some tweaking there to make what they said actually, or what staff said at the last work session, I believe, actually show up in the language.
The nature of this rider requires commission approval of the rate discount offered to the customer. The final offered rate shall be calculated by the company using its proprietary pricing model and produce net benefits to ratepayers. So is that the area that's unclear?
Well, it to me it's not unclear, but it doesn't say that the rate doesn't get offered until it comes in and it's vetted and approved by the commission.
I see. Okay. Yeah. All right, with that change, I think I've covered everything I need to on this issue.
I thought I kind of had, but now I have a whole different question I hadn't thought of before, so it's probably an obvious answer, but when we talk about discriminatory rates, can anyone be discriminated against, or is it just like protected classes or what? Aren't economic development rates kind of discriminatory to start with, because this customer that's similar to that customer gets them and that one doesn't?
Commissioner, yes, and I had to learn the hard way from our esteemed former pub director, who was an economist, that in this world of regulatory economics, discrimination means somebody subsidizing somebody else. But in the more general sense, as long as you treat similarly situated people the same, then you're not discriminating in the way that you're thinking. If in telephone, back when they were fully regulated, there was always a provision in there about business practices, and if they were non-discriminatory, you could give like a business discount for volume on long distance. And as long as everybody that had at least that volume, was offered it, then it was not discriminatory. So there's a long and rich history of this, but that's why we require things like the contracts to be filed and reviewed, and in many situations, and that's one thing that's not happening in this case because of the trade secret part of the formula, but if other people can see what the offer is, I have to have this much volume to get the long distance discount, maybe I can work up to it and I can afford it. You know, if they can see what the qualifications are and they come in and they say, I meet them, and the company says, yes, you do, then it's not discriminatory. Now, if the company is applying something that isn't in that tariff or not applying it the same each time, that's a different problem, and that's something we are supposed to be watching for.
Well, so if the new business is some kind of a processing center that uses a certain amount of electricity and, you know, all the other things, the time of day and all that, is similar to one that already exists, but the economic development rate is what it would take to pooch this from somebody else, then does it also have to be offered to the existing one that is very similar?
I would hope so, and I'm not
sure. So even though they exist?
I don't know enough about the tariff. We'll come up to take a mic.
The tariff says for greenfield customers or existing customers, and there's standards to meet for both. So if the existing one...
Isn't it for an existing customer that has new load that's expanding? So if the existing customer is just cruising along and he sees, somebody got a lower rate, but he's not a new customer, doesn't have new load, then he doesn't meet the applicability requirements. So he's not eligible for the tariff.
But just the fact that they're an existing customer doesn't exclude them.
If they have new load. But the tariff's for new load.
Right. They'd have to have an increase, too.
Yeah, if they're increasing their load enough to qualify under the tariff, then they should be eligible. And then the other thing I was thinking while this discussion was going on is that it's not discrimination that's not right, that you can't do. It's unreasonable discrimination.
That's true. That's the word.
So, I mean, discrimination, it could be anything. So it has to be unreasonable for it to be prohibited.
I think the burden falls on the company going forward to be consistent. And if you have two businesses in the same area and one is at a higher rate than the other because the lower rate customer received an economic development rate, took advantage of the rider, that goes with doing business, and that's always been a challenge. You see it all the time. Someone goes to the store, they buy a refrigerator. And then the next week it's on sale. And that might not be the best example, but I know personally, I dealt with it in the private sector where you'd offer a special and then you'd have the longtime customer would come back and say, well, wait a second, I've been doing business with you for 20 years, and why didn't I get a better rate? But if it's an overall benefit, which is something that we'll look at, that it's not subsidization, but it's a benefit to the system, then that is something that, you know, frankly, the company will just have to deal with on their own if everything else is in line. Because they undoubtedly, you know, two businesses, they have coffee, they talk, and they compare rates. And then all of a sudden it's like, well, wait a second. Well, so why is one getting, you know, why are they getting a better rate than I am? And you know, that will come into play, but as long as they're not violating any rules along the way.
Well, I was going to say, when you talked earlier, Commissioner, about the looking favorable at this kind of thing, I guess I think what's best for the system as a whole is to have good rates and reliable service all the time, rather than sort of this, I don't know, in my mind I always frame it as the furniture store mentality, where you're waving the super sale and trying to do all these maneuvers to try and catch something outside of your just normal business model. But I recognize this is the world in which we live, and probably others are doing that, so I'm probably all right with the fact that they need to do this. But now, and just what we were talking about there with the rates being reasonable and such, is that a good reason then why, as my understanding is, with a different utility that has an economic development rate built in, that they have the schedule as part of that on file with us? And so should that be required here, so it's not just kind of a flying by the seat of your pants, go out there and do whatever it takes to get this customer mentality, but it does actually go by something and provide some assurance that there is going to be a reasonable return and not a potential loss that ends up being passed on to the other customers.
Well, the proposal by Otter Tail uses a calculation, an application computer program to determine the rate for the customer, depending on that individual customer's circumstances. The likelihood of another customer I don't know what the likelihood is of another customer being situated in exactly the same way and therefore being able to get the same rate. And so typically I would tend to lean toward creating a tariff for a larger type of customer, and so they could all get the same rates. This way, there's a potential that every one that would qualify for this service would get a different rate. And maybe what's needed is a separate class of customer, and you provide the same rate to everybody that would fit into that class versus a different rate for everybody. That's an alternative to what they're proposing.
We did do it that way before.
Yeah, we've done it.
Does that cause a problem with other economic development riders that have been approved? Is that inconsistent?
I don't think. I think the companies can be individual in their tariffs. The other alternative is the individual contracts that come in for approval one at a time. I mean, companies have been doing something similar to this, but the two differences here, or what Pat just went over, the running of the model is the one difference, and it makes two consequences, what Pat just mentioned and the fact that it's trade secret. And those are pretty big concepts for regulators of many years to get over, but doesn't make them wrong. It just makes them something to be thinking about.
As this is written, we really don't have any more oversight over what they do on these. They can offer pretty much any rate they want to and make it fall under this, right? It's their model. They're the one running it and determining it. And so if something is new, they can just pretty much do any rate they want on, as filed here, could they not?
Well, partly as it's what you said first, as it's written, I think that's pretty true. The concept that we heard is supposed to be is that the model run would be coming in to staff, and staff would be running it and looking at the inputs and those things and satisfying itself that it was done appropriately and came out with legitimate numbers. And, you know, I would have to be relying on what staff says because I'm certainly not going to be able to run the model.
But there would be a check and balance along the way.
So, Pat, your idea of a totally new tariff for a different category of customers, how would you, what would that be to try to address? It doesn't seem like they necessarily know what customer they're going for, except for, I guess, the load size. So you're just saying a larger load customer?
Right. I mean, MDU has a economic development rate called the Rate 34. It sets out the parameters, you know, the size of that the customer needs to be. And then it has a basic service charge listed in the tariff. Does say that the demand charge can be negotiated, or it would be negotiated, and the energy charges is the charge that's otherwise applicable to a general service customer. And so, contract, and then in the tariff it says contracts shall be filed with and approved by the North Dakota Public Service Commission. So we would have the opportunity then to review the contract, see, and compare it to other contracts that MDU has filed, for example, and determine whether there was any discrimination among customers.
So that's for the individual contracts. Weren't you also suggesting another rate class?
A rate class, yeah. MDU's is a separate rate class.
Oh, okay. So that's just the contract is a rate class.
Yes, a contract under the rate
class.
MDU is entitled to have other contracts, too. It don't necessarily fit under Rate 34 individually if they were to come in for approval for some other reason. It doesn't eliminate them.
Okay.
There might not be any right now,
and
but it doesn't eliminate.
What's the advantage of that over what is proposed here?
I think the difference is the, you know, the calculation of the rate. Under the computer program, it might be very hard to determine the difference, why there's a difference in the rates, unless we thoroughly understand the program, the application, the computer program. Mm-hmm. Under like a tariff like MDU's, we would be comparing more basic factors like their demand, their energy use, and determining whether that customer was different from the others that got a certain rate.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the main thing that you're looking at in reviewing these tariffs is whether or not they're getting more money than it's costing them to serve. If there's some margin in there for the company, mm-hmm. then they're better off with this customer than without them.
Right.
And so that has kind of always been the primary thing that we've looked at with these kind of contracts.
Well, that, and if everyone similarly situated gets the opportunity, those are the two things you're looking for.
So it might be different costs to serve different customers.
Right.
I guess The other thing is that with the computer application, like you mentioned, it's not available for another customer to view. They can't determine whether maybe they should be getting the same rate or not. There's nothing that they can really look at to see that they should be getting the same rate.
Mm-hmm. So after they did offer their development period, which presumably got them into the...
Use your mic, please.
So the idea is that the development period gets them load that might not have already been there, might not have otherwise been there for them. And then when they get off the development period, get past that, then these customers are paying full rate. And if you have the capacity to serve them and you don't have to go out and get any incremental capacity or something, your system is better off having this customer than without it, because he'll pick up a share of other system costs.
And isn't that a benefit to doing it this way versus the contract? Because the contract would not necessarily have that gradual steps taken each year to move the discount rate closer to the standard rate.
When we first did these rates many years ago,
Contract rates, you mean, like MDU?
Economic development rates. Okay. The commission had certain guidelines at that point to make it acceptable way back then. And, you know, I'm not saying that we can't do something different. Well, what their guidelines back then were on these contracts were a set demand charge. You couldn't discount the demand charge at all. This is when we first implemented that. And then the energy charge was given a range, and then it decreased, I think, by 20% a year over 5 years, the discount, until at the end of 5 years it was done. And this was in the tariff. And if the company wanted something different than what was in the tariff, the idea was that they could file a contract with the commission and then get it approved, and they didn't have to stick to the tariff. It was a special contract. And the commission can approve special contracts without a tariff for them. We've got them going on, especially MDU cases, where they have several load retention type contracts going on. We've just approved them individually. So that's how it was all set up. And it's changed over the years. And MDU somehow ended up with requiring approval of each contract, which was what they wanted, I guess, to make sure that there was never a question. Mm-hmm. And with this tariff here with Otter Tail, I haven't been really going through it real strongly, but I think it is of the same thing, where they would submit each contract to the commission, and then they would have a negotiated rate and term, and everything is negotiated in the contract. So it's kind of like the special contracts that we used to approve if they were outside of the filed tariff. The tariff, the idea was that anybody could meet that tariff requirement, be eligible for it, and not have to have it submitted to the commission for approval.
Do you guys have a recommendation, any of you, on this?
No.
I just wanted to correct one tiny thing, but thanks for remembering that sheet with that economic development policies. There is. There's no contracts involved here. As I understand it, it's not like negotiating between the customer and the company. There's the running of the model and then submitting that to the commission, I think, subject to check.
Mm-hmm. And back to the question you had earlier about the fact that it over 5 years the negotiated rate starts to phase out, mm-hmm. and MDU has the same thing in theirs.
So, okay, so what happens with the customer on the better rate? They're going to expand, they're going to require a larger load delivered to their place of business, but they don't meet the requirements. There's no chargeback of the difference, correct?
I believe that's what the Otter Tail has stated in their filing, yes, that they are not coming to the commission to recover the difference between what the customer charged under the regular rates. And what they would be charged under the economic development rate.
No, but there's really no penalty stroke for the customer.
If the customer is what you're asking.
If they don't take on as large a load as they say they're going to.
I don't honestly know the answer to that. I read what you said as they're not coming for some kind of a general increase in revenue.
Right, I saw that.
As opposed to charging the customer the regular rate instead of the discounted rate.
So and they would also, the rate that they would offer would be a rate that would be above the cost. But it might not provide as great a return if the rate was at the general service rate, for example.
If they don't meet the eligibility requirements, they don't get the discount, is the way I read it.
Well, they're reviewed. I think it's number 6. It just says customers who do not meet the 3-year minimum revenue guarantee as per Otter Tail Power's line extension policy will not qualify for this rate schedule. I don't know what that means exactly in terms of from that point on after the 3-year period. So 36 months pass. They're not meeting the load requirement. Then what happens?
Were you reading from the tariff?
Yeah.
Do not meet the 3-year revenue guarantee.
Someone on the phone? Why are you breathing into the mic?
Is that something we need to consider? And I relate it back to
line extension.
In my past life offering volume discounts for a promise to do X amount of business with you. But then you get to the end of whether it's a 12-month period, whatever the contract period was, and they're short, meaning they no longer qualify for that lower rate. They should have been at a higher rate.
And they should have been before at the higher rate because they weren't.
Right, right.
Well, the word guarantee gives me that same question, and maybe that's something we have to get Otter Tail information. To me, guarantee looks like they are going to be paying that whether they used it or not.
As I read this, I think they're referring to their line extension. They are referring to their line extension policy, and under a line extension policy, if the revenue, they're trying to decide whether to extend a line to this customer under the line extension policy, and if you do not provide a certain amount of revenue, they won't extend the line. And here they're saying there is in their line extension policy evidently a 3-year minimum revenue guarantee.
Then it says they will not qualify for the rate schedule
because
after 3 years.
Line extended to them, probably.
So if they don't meet their line extension guarantee over the 3 years, I would imagine that they'd go back and get billed for the line extension for their share of it. So that's.
Well, I would potentially imagine that, but I don't know.
I would expect it would work.
They have to meet the 3-year minimum revenue guarantee on here.
lots of missing information at this point on these questions. Mm-hmm. We don't know.
Yeah, if that could be clarified. Otherwise, could other customers be negatively impacted? But then you also get into situations where the business just doesn't make it. In the 3 years, if it only lasts 18 months, for example, and then goes belly up.
It doesn't say what happens after that.
Well, I would guess that they'd be gone.
Right, but I also want to make sure that then...
Can't get blood out of a turnip. I mean...
Right, right.
So, I mean, at that point, they're gone, and you shouldn't be out anything as a utility because you got your incremental costs covered over that period of time.
If the revenue... If the company that's signing up for service guarantees that they will produce, that they will have enough revenue to meet this three-year guarantee, and then they go belly up after a year, what about the cost of that extension?
Yeah, the extension. Yep. Yep.
It's going to fall back either on the ratepayers or the investors, one of the two.
Yeah. But that's a common line extension question.
Right. And, I mean, I understand it's a risk of doing business as a utility. There's no guarantee anyone that you run a line extension to and you offer service to is going to be around over the long term. You would hope they would, but they're, you know, businesses, on occasion, they don't make it. So then the rate of recovery is... lower, meaning, well, to Commissioner Christman's point, others would be subsidizing that. I suppose the reverse is, well, no, I'm not going to say it. It'll just muddy the water even more. Not that the water's muddy. It's more of a question.
But it does seem like if it is some of project that has a huge line extension cost, that'll be in the model run and be addressed soon.
So you're saying the model should take care of that?
Unless they go belly up. Unless they go belly up right away, there's risk.
Yeah.
So what is a reasonable level of risk for other... Let's just say it's a very expensive extension. And this is worst-case scenario. And 10 months later, the bottom falls out. That business is gone.
I'd say that you get to review each contract. And so you can address that on a case-by-case basis.
Speculating whether the business will make it or not?
No. How much is at risk?
Oh. Well, kind of the same thing, though.
How big is the risk?
Mm-hmm.
How much money are we talking about here?
Yeah, that's true.
Didn't we talk about that just and decide that we aren't reviewing each contract?
Well, I thought you were in this case.
Yeah.
In the Otter Tail?
Reviewing
the model. The way the language is now, we were concerned about that.
Yes.
That all we're doing is reviewing the model.
Not the way it's written now.
Okay.
If there's a means to minimize risk, even though as a percentage how many businesses don't make it, but some don't.
Some don't, yeah.
But as I was saying, you've always got that risk.
Mm-hmm.
With a new customer coming in, if you're paying the extension under the extension policy, if they don't make it over the period of time that you expected to recover that revenue, then it's at risk.
I think there's a difference, though, Jerry, in that in the normal utility, just like you know there's going to be some customers who never pay their bill, but when rates are set and the company goes into, you know that's there. And I don't think it's any secret in anybody's mind that when the rare case happens that things go bad and you're not able to recover the cost of service from a particular customer, the fact is that's spread out over everybody else, and we all know it. This is different in that it is being sold to us that other customers do not have to subsidize this. And so we're looking at situations where it potentially could happen and just need to at least be looking at it in a realistic way, that there are, I think, reasonable possibilities that the other customers might have to end up subsidizing some of this, just like they do with other people on the regular rates. But that's why we have regular rates, not just a total capitalist model where everybody shows up at the office and negotiates the best rate they can on a given day for their electric service to their home. And one day it might be 10 cents higher than the day before. That doesn't happen. Here we're getting into that more Wild West situation.
We'd still, though, the customers are paying for their cost. They aren't getting a rate that is lower than cost to serve them unless they go under. Like, so in that case, in that respect, it is the same as other line extensions. They're just paying a little less.
And it would be the same line extension policy regardless if they're under this tariff or if they don't qualify for this tariff. If they need a line extension, they have a formula that looks ahead for probably a 3-year period, if I remember right, for how much revenue they're going to get. And they need to make enough so that they get enough revenue from them to cover the cost of extending the line. If they don't, they require a customer contribution towards the extension up front. So that's how that works.
But with the normal routine customer,
yep.
Like I said, everybody knows some situations things will not work out rightly.
Yep.
And so everyone pays in a little bit higher than what it would have to be if that wasn't the case to cover for those.
Mm-hmm.
So to say that offering these at just enough to get that marginal rate, to get that customer and the additional load, there is still risk in it. And I just don't think it's right to not acknowledge that when you take it at that very, very minimal level, just to make sure that you're going to get the new load, if things go bad, it's going to be spread out to somebody else. And
yeah, that would exist. You know, I realize that would exist if the customer was on the normal rate. Okay, that risk still exists, but to a lesser extent because you're collecting more along the way. So you get further down the cost recovery road. But the only other, I don't know if it's a level of protection, if you received a credit at the end of your 3-year period, for example, because you've met the requirements and then you get the discount at that point in time. But that's not terribly attractive in terms of an economic development rider for a new business that is looking to save as much as they can early on and not 3 years later.
Yeah. Another thing is that I would expect that they modeled the amount of revenue they were expecting from this customer over that 3 years. So that would include the discount in the model.
This is what we don't know any of this for sure.
Right.
No. I do know that advocacy staff said okay.
Felt comfortable with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't have anything else.
Anything else to wrap up, staff? Okay.
I guess then it would. Could be on the next commission agenda for commission vote.
Well, I don't know that it's going to be on the next commission agenda. That's tomorrow, Pat.
I mean, the one after that. Excuse me.
I would say we should, though. I mean, we're looking at things that were from December, so let's get it on the, if not.
You want it on the next
tomorrow
one.
Is too soon, but after that, I think we should tie it up. Let's just make our decision so the company knows.
So, one you had, Alana, you had mentioned at the beginning or early on about the company's willing to.
Oh, to tweak some
tweak
of the language.
And clarify some of the language.
I would plan on talking with them about some of the other language that you had questions about.
So I don't know. And actually, my calendar is incorrect, the commission meeting's not tomorrow. It's Wednesday, right? Okay.
Right.
Made me nervous. I think I have a conflict.
I doubt it'll get done for the Wednesday meeting.
But I think it's reasonable maybe to have it on the 27th.
I think that sounds reasonable.
Okay. All right. Now I don't have anything else.
Pat, did that finish what you wanted to add there at the end?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. We are concluded, but we're back here at 3:00 for the other work session.